Mr. Sherwood relates.
As I was saying a moment or two ago, the Japanese had ended up bottled up, withdrawn into the southern end of Ramri Island, and we carried out small reconnaissances aimed at discovering what they were doing there, whether they were attempting to escape to the mainland, and if so, what should be done about it. And going further inland ourselves, using the absolute maze of water channels interlacing the mangrove swamps of that part of the coast, many miles deep, these narrow and wide and narrow channels winding way inland from the sea, all tidal, so some of them drying out at low water, mud up to the eyebrows if you went ashore, so forth. And we did one or two operations, recces, inland on the mainland to find out what the Japanese dispositions were there as well. And once again brought back useful information, which was duly passed on to Div headquarters. And we were who by then were based in Chakpyu itself. So we learned from them that they were pleased with what we'd done and continued to use us for reconnaissance work. And as I remember it, our final operation in that part of the world, on Ramri, was when I think air reconnaissance showed or supported what we'd discovered, which was that the Japs were trying to break out of the end of the island where they were bottled up to try and get across to the mainland to catch up with their own forces there. And it was determined to block this escape. And we were pulled in to cooperate in this exercise. set off late one night in the motor gunboat with our canoes on board, so as to arrive at first light the next morning at a point further down one of these channels winding through the mangrove swamps, in time to rendezvous with the Royal Navy, who were there in some force, though we didn't know what. At first light, we were wandering down one of these channels, or chongs, as they're called there, on this motor gunboat, this Royal Indian Navy motor gunboat. We rounded a corner, and there was a sort of mist lying over the water. And to our astonishment, we came out of this mist and could hardly believe that in front of our eyes was a fully grown destroyer lying at anchor in this narrow but very deep channel. Very heartening sight in the middle of nowhere like that, in the middle of these mangrove swamps. We reported on board her. They had been busy for some days before shooting up anything that moved in the mangrove swamps on the Ramri Island side of this channel. Whether it was locals or Japs escaping, they didn't care. Anything that appeared, moved or floated, they opened fire on. And our role was to be taken further down this channel, into which emptied several other major channels known to be used for country boat work, these large Burmese craft that used to ply for trading purposes up and down their own coastline. And four lots of us were to be stationed with Bren guns and other arms at the mouths of these channels where they opened into the main channel where the destroyer was, and wait for the Japs to appear in whatever form they appeared on the water, since they were unlikely to be breaking out through the swamps themselves, although on several occasions they did that, but not where we were. And we had quite a successful operation there, because each of our little subsections had got an interpreter, a Burmese interpreter. So in the event of a boat heaving into sight, working its way down either under sail or down the channel, he could hail his own fellow countrymen in their own language and find out what was going on. And the first large country boat that appeared and that he hailed refused to reply. He hailed again, and through binoculars we could see agitated movement on board. So without further ado, having given them their chance to reply and say who they were, we opened up, and there were a whole load of Japs hidden below a lot of bamboo matting stuff placed over the top of this country boat on their trying to get out. They opened fire on us as well. Didn't hit any of us, and we didn't hit any of them that we could tell, because we lost this boat. It drifted on slowly down the Chong, down the channel, until it hit the main channel, where the Navy had a sort of backup in case there were anything that got out of those channels, ready to deal with them, and they were dealt with there. But that was quite a successful operation overall in preventing the Japs from getting out. They were given practically no quarter. They were just sort of dealt with as everybody felt they should be dealt with. And we then returned to, after this excitement, in which one of our own blokes was killed, sadly, by a shot from the destroyer, which had spotted movement, thought it was a Jap, opened fire, and it was one of our other parties. And this poor devil was killed. Mm. The back was blown out. Sort of thing had happened often everywhere anyhow, in far greater numbers. But being smaller, part of a small unit, you know, to lose one like that, where each knew everybody else so well and hadn't known them for so long, was a real tragedy. It is in any big unit, I suppose, but in a small one even more so, more like a sort of family together. And we operated that way. We returned to Chalk Pew, where nothing happened for quite some time, and by now it was the monsoon season was approaching. It was getting more and more humid. I forget when it breaks then, round about June, I think, along that coast. We then heard that an operation was to be mounted against Rangoon itself, and that Rangoon was to be invaded up the Rangoon River from an invasion fleet to be assembled at Ramree Harbour, at Chong Pew Harbour, Ramree Island, and that we were to go down with this force and do whatever there the army might find for us to do. This small fleet, I suppose there are only about three or four troop ships with an aircraft carrier, a few destroyers too, I think, ambled out of Chalk Pew Harbour one evening, just about the time the war with Germany was coming to an end. And I think the rumours of that, I seem to remember, were just about reaching us as we pushed off to go further south to Rangoon, which cheered everybody enormously. We thought, well, matter of time, that's over. The Japs may soon pack up. Although it wasn't, as I learned later, anticipated they would pack up that easily, of course, until the bombs were dropped on them in Japan, Hiroshima and so on. So in due course, we joined the convoy. We sailed down the coast, rounded the mouths of the Irrawaddy, which are fairly numerous. It's a kind of delta down there. Probably know from the map anyway. Just as the monsoon broke, and we sailed up the Rangoon River, which was heavily mined, so shipping was moving fairly slowly. In fact, we lay off and were offloaded into landing craft to go, I don't know, some 14 or 15 miles up the river to be put ashore. And we... By this time, we'd been told the Japs had gone. It was virtually another bloodless invasion, like Akiab had been a few months before. There were a few Japs in the vicinity. There were snipers about. But the main force had withdrawn eastwards into, what, Malaya, I suppose. So once again, we got away with it. There were a few snipers firing, as I've said. We squelched ashore in torrents of monsoon rain and took up our quarters in a village which was already blazing merrily from Japs who'd pulled out shortly before, whom we didn't see, gone, skedaddled. And I think a day or two after that we were moved up into Rangoon itself, which was a real sorry mess, very badly wrecked. The main community there holding things together was the Chinese. The rest, mixed community of Burmese and Indians, was just a shambles, really, all very friendly and welcoming and so on, but totally disorganized. But the Chinese community was organized, and it sort of closed in on itself, really, and was trying to run what was left of the city. that was virtually the end of operations for us, because there was nothing for us to do when we got to Rangoon. I was returned to Ceylon ahead of the others, ahead of the rest of the group, who followed some days or a week or two later, I can't remember which now. And this was would have been what? When was the invasion? And when was the end of the war? June, wasn't it? May.
August for...
For Japs, but the German war was May. So I suppose we were all back in Ceylon by about June, thereabouts, to continue training once again, further jungle training, further canoe training, and so forth. Monotonous, because we've been done all before. But then you have to keep people occupied, as you well know, and the services do this all the time. We didn't particularly mind it. And then some towards August, and all we'd done up to then was train, there were no operations at all. One of the other groups, all the groups were back by then, because the operations in Burma had virtually come to a standstill. The 26th Indian Division, to which we were attached, had reached Rangoon a matter of days before the 14th Army coming down the Irrawaddy. And that ended the war in Burma. There was still the war in Malaya to be tackled. And an operation which I think was codenamed Zipper was being mounted to sail across the Bay of Bengal and land down the Malay Peninsula to tackle the Japs there and drive them out of that part of the world. Before that could take off, and we were nominated for an operation there, another recce operation of a kind. News came through that they dropped the first atom bomb on Hiroshima and then the next one on Nagasaki, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
And the war was over, suddenly, just like that. Or so we thought. At that time, it wasn't known what the Japanese commander of the Malay forces was going to do. I think he was a General Yamashita. He was known as the Tiger of Malaya or something. It wasn't known whether he would heed the emperor's call to his forces throughout the Far East to surrender, or whether he would not. So, to the best of my recollection, it was decided that Operation Zipper would proceed on the assumption that the Japanese would resist. Malaya had to be reoccupied anyway. And with this in mind, although the war was over, we found ourselves, I did with my half section of C Group, given the job of being taken by destroyer with a total of four canoes, I think, four foul boats, to take over the One Fathom Bank lighthouse, which lies off Port Swettenham, occupy it if possible, get the lighthouse working again, to show a light to the landing craft coming in to land on the coast of Malaya in the vicinity of Port Swettenham. And with that in mind, two of us, the sergeant that I had with me all the time and I, were sent down to do a crash course on how to make a lighthouse work down to a lighthouse south of Colombo, the Barberin Lighthouse was its name, I remember. Barberyn, because the mechanism of it was identical to that in the One Fathom Bank light. So if you knew how to work that one, in theory, if you could remember it all, you knew how to work the other one. And this was very interesting, really, to do this in this lighthouse. And what we found it was, and you may know this from readings or experience for all I know, you're really dealing with a thing like an enormous grandfather clock, which you have to wind up with handles, winding a great weight up to the top of the tower, then releasing it. And as the weight slowly descends, as in that sort of thing, but on a much bigger scale, the lantern is revolved by this very simple, non-electrical, purely mechanical operation. And the lighting of the lamp itself, to anybody who had experience of acetylene bicycle lamps in the days before the war, was no more than that. It was just bigger. I think we did a day on this winding up the handle, setting the mechanism going, observing that it was revolving properly, lighting the light, and so forth. And armed with that mass of information, we returned to Jaffna and the base, drew up a plan for occupying the lighthouse, and nobody could tell us whether it was occupied by anybody, whether Japs or Malays or who. It was known that access was by a platform built low down, fairly near to sea level, from which a ladder extended upwards to a trapdoor into the main house of the bit of the lighthouse itself. It was one of these screw pile lighthouses. So lattice work around the base, then the house itself around the top, the first platform, and the tower itself with the light on the top of it, on top of that. So we'd worked out exactly how we were going to do this. And if we couldn't, if we found it occupied and the Japs there and the trapdoor barring our ingress into the lighthouse itself, we had an alternative Aldous lamp signalling arrangement to show a light from the lower platform to guide the ships in, whilst our comrades in arms made sure the Japs didn't open the trapdoor and throw something unpleasant down us whilst we were crouched on the platform showing our light. In the event, and once again, that part of the operation was cancelled. I don't know why, but we were just told, forget it, it's not on. I think the invasion fleet went in just the same, and they found that the Japs had surrendered. So that was a bloodless landing where it could have been an extremely bloody one. The bloodier because the war was over and nobody saw any point in getting killed when the war was officially over and the Japanese in Japan had surrendered. So there was that aspect of it which bugged everybody a bit, but all was well that ends well. And that was the end of the war and the end of the Army SBS, which was disbanded soon afterwards. So, you know, if you listen to all this right through, somewhere along the line somebody has said something about war being long periods of boredom with periods of excitement and action and then more waiting and waiting and waiting. And I think playing this through to anybody, they would say that's a perfect example of it, because I was in the army from virtually the beginning until after the end of it, and the amount of action overall is very small, full of excitement and full of potential for danger and all sorts of nasty things happening, yet not happening. Plenty of narrow squeaks and brushes with things, but nothing terrible, except for one or two blokes we lost.